I'm glad that so many have been able to stay for the final session. It is a heavy day that you have to listen to the one speaker in three sessions. I know that, but certainly I appreciate the opportunity. I know you think it's quite a task, but it's quite an enjoyment that we're able to try and tackle a subject. I appreciate a forum like this where we don't always have an opportunity in a single ministry meeting or in a short space or a conference. They're very valuable meetings, but we don't have opportunity to expand and open up on a single topic. So I'm more than happy to share with our brethren in this particular endeavor. I remember those days back at the painting of the hall. The first night that we were there, we spent half the night looking for a mouse that we never found. I remember Sam McCormick's sleeping bag and Bobby Smith's porch. And I think I climbed onto the back of the seats. And the story goes on, but that'll do for session four. I'd like to read this time from the book of Genesis, chapter 39. Genesis, chapter 39. And we read here at verse 1, I think we'll start with. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, or captain of the executioners, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord had made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put in his hand. At the end of verse 6 tells us Joseph was a goodly person, or we would say in our day, good-looking person, a handsome person, and well-favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused. He said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth or knoweth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass, as he spake to Joseph, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her, or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand, and fled, and got him out. And then she slandered him. Verse 20. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So we all are familiar with the various events of Joseph's life, so that will be for our reading. Now, before we get into the subject, the particular subject before us in this chapter, I want to do a little bit, very briefly, by way of recap, so that we get our bearings and be able to draw the study of the day to a fairly tidy conclusion. We began by thinking of the world of Cain, and we considered that to be a culture of possession and pleasure. It depended on what could be amassed and all the pleasure that could be associated with it. The culture of Cain, it was a materialistic culture, materialism, the primacy and the priority of possession and pleasure. We are still in an age, this culture has still its descendants, and they put tremendous emphasis upon sport and leisure and recreation and entertainment, so the world of Cain has not yet disappeared. It was a man who knew God, listened to God's word, took seriously God's warning, engaged busily in God's work, and walked with God. It was a man like that who lived in such a world. And God said, "Be holy." And one man. And the multitude and the millions of a culture, God said, thee only. So it's possible to live for God when one has the odds against them. When we turned a few pages from the world of Cain to the world of Shinar, it wasn't there the culture of materialism. It was the culture of humanism. The glory and the greatness and the grandeur and the gifts of man and the skill and so on. I didn't take the time, but there is a difference between humanism and humanitarianism. Some people put them all together. Humanitarianism can be a very useful thing, the care for the suffering. We don't ever want to confuse humanism as a system, a philosophical system of men who have rejected God with humanitarianism. May God give us tender hearts for suffering humanity. Neither do we want to confuse humanism with the humanity. The humanities, some of the brethren were telling me that the humanities is on the sign outside this building. And this is a college of technology. So we'll have to be very, very careful so that the roof doesn't come in around us. But there is a difference between the humanity, the academic study, indeed the great universities of Cambridge and Oxford and Trinity, they were built for the study of humanities. And Belfast has fallen on its face because it has recently closed the classics department. May God look upon them and have mercy and give them some sense before the age closes in intellectual darkness altogether. So we talked about humanism. It wasn't so much possessions and pleasure. It was pride and permanent. Look at our city. Look at our big car. And we are proud of that. And God blew upon the whole business. There was a man came out from that. And he left the fabulous civilization of the great city of Ur of the Chaldees. And he looked at a city unseen. He lived in this world as a pilgrim. He put his trust in God. And God said, I called Abram alone. One man against the culture of Shinar. One man against the culture of Cain. May God encourage all our people here today to have a little bit of backbone. As God be for us, who can be against us? Now tonight, we move to the culture of Egypt. And it will not be the possessions and the pleasures and the pride and the permanence. We will mainly be thinking in Genesis 39 about the perversion and the permissiveness. This is not humanism. This is not materialism. This is relativism. This is the culture that breathes in our day and says there's no such a thing as moral absolute. If it suits you, if it's convenient, if you feel like it, do it. Don't be judging yourself. Don't be giving yourself a bad conscience because you're trying to think about a moral absolute which stands erect and says if you deviate from this, you're wrong. Twist it any shape you like. And according to the contours of convenience and feeling, just suit yourself. That's the culture around us. That's the culture of Egypt and its relativism. You see, the culture that we live in 2002, it is really built upon three pillars. A heritage from a previous age. Now, if you can listen to this, it will be maybe helpful to you someday. I'll admit that some of the material that I've covered today might have seemed to be irrelevant to some of the older believers. I apologize for that. I think we need to recover the relevance of the Bible. And if that has been the case, it's just too bad, but what I want to say tonight will be practical. And I might have said earlier today one or two things, I'm not sure that you didn't understand. I'll not be intending to embarrass anybody, but I'll be saying one or two things tonight that will be quite explicit. And I'll not be beating about the bush, because we're living in the age of sexual perversity. And we want to look at that challenge of our culture from Genesis chapter 39. That is, just to go over it again, so that we get the bearing. Here's the beginning of culture. Here's the genesis of culture. Here's the commencement of a whole society which in every aspect is with us still. Because God's book is always up to date. In Genesis 4, the emphasis was upon things. Get a harp, get an organ, build a city, get gold, get more cattle, get new systems and methods of agriculture, marketing and merch, get the thing. Thing. In Genesis 11, the emphasis was upon technology. Bricks and slime and brains and brawn and brilliance. Give us the tools and we will do the job. Technology. The emphasis tonight is going to be upon temptation. Now, we appreciate technology. And we appreciate things. I've already mentioned this. We couldn't do without it. I talked about communication. You know, we're living in a world where each one of us, we benefit from the telephone. Many of you folks keep in touch with family, friends, a good distance away through email. Many of you, as I said, carry mobile phones, and you're constantly receiving text messages. We can do a greater number of things in a shorter space of time. We can travel places and travel to meetings and all that purely because of technology. You know, technology has set us up. And it has put into our lap many advantages and many favors. And we enjoy the perks of technology. The only thing I would say is this, we've had to pay a price. You know, the perks are great, but the price is high. There is so much technology in our culture that every single person has, I think, greater demands upon his or her time than, say, 40 years ago. You can be contacted almost anywhere. It's almost impossible to get away into a quiet corner and sit down and quietly think things through with God. Our privacy has been eroded. Now, if we are going to get the perks of technology and we are going to attend to all these things, you know, cars and cookers and cameras and machines, and if we are going to keep up with them, to pay the price for those things, we're going to have to rob somebody. And I fear we have robbed God. We have robbed God. And I don't know about you good men in the meeting tonight, but you just be honest now, because if I was being honest, I would have to hang my head in shame. The more gimmickry I get, the more time I get to gadgets, and the less time to God. The men of 100 years ago, and I say we don't want to turn the clock back. We're not going back like the Amish, and we're not being unrealistic. But you know, the men of 100 years ago that didn't have the gadgets said more of God. And they had time. And they could sit down in a corner where nobody could contact them. And they could just spend the time thinking with God. And I think they were the richer. And we are the poorer. Well, what I wanted to mention there was that we have come into the heritage of three great civilizations. Now, there's a difference between civilization and culture, but I'm not elaborating that just now. Three civilizations have provided us with a pillar upon which modern culture rests. First of all, there is the Greek civilization. Some of you younger folks remember this. Then there is the Roman civilization. And then there is Jewish / Christian civilization. Now those are the three pillars of culture in Europe. And each one of those three pillars and each one of those civilizations has communicated to us a different aspect. For example, from the Romans, we've received our legal system and our judicial system and the structure of an army and the running of politics and the setting up of a cabinet and a senate. That all comes to us from the Romans. Nothing wrong. We're glad of stable government. From the Greeks, we have received philosophy. That's what keeps our education system going. From the Greeks, we have also received sport. because there was nobody had games like the Greeks. And some of the Greek games, I tell you, they were wonderful setups. But I'm not going into, unless a Christian gets involved in all sorts of hooly-pooly and tom-pooly and games of culture, there's so much goes with it. Well, you'll have to think of games are in keeping with God, and you'll decide that just in the chamber of your own mind. We got that from the Greeks, as well as education. Law. Now, when it came to Jewish-Christian background, from them we got the standards of morality and behavior. Now, the makers and the masters of the culture of the 2000s, they have said, we want to keep the Greek stuff. Some of those old philosophers and some of those games people give us, they said, we want to keep the Roman stuff. We don't want to lose our politics. But they said, do you see that Jewish Christian stuff? See that Ten Commandments stuff? Give us our recreation. Give us our education. Give us our judiciary system. Give us our armies. But you see that Ten Commandments stuff, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, that's just a handicap. They're going to throw it out. So that we find ourselves in a culture that has rejected Jewish Christian values. And may God help us to appreciate them, because they are the values of morality that have been sanctioned in heaven and reflect the holiness of God himself. Now then, we'll come to this man in Egypt. You know, I don't need to say that Joseph is one of our favorite characters in Old Testament scripture, and the brethren could preach for a long enough and very happily and helpfully upon him. You think about him as a son in his father's house. You think about him as a seeker of the welfare of his brethren. You think about him as a sufferer down in the pit. You think about him as a slave standing on the block in the market in Egypt. You think about him as a steward in Potiphar's house. You think about him sentenced to the prison house. In the prison house, God is with this man. He becomes a supervisor. Because if God is with a man, you cannot keep him down, no matter how many are against him. A supervisor. And when he's in the prison, he also becomes a seer. Because two of those prisoners have dreams, and he tells them what they mean. And they turn the page, and the man that interprets the two dreams of the prisoner, he interprets two dreams of the Pharaoh. He can stand with men at the bottom, or he can stand with the great Pharaoh at the top, and he's the seer. He becomes the statesman of Egypt. The administrator of all the affairs of Egypt. He becomes the savior of the world. He fills the storehouses, and he opens the storehouses to feed a hungry world. He becomes the shepherd of his brethren, and he brings them to a place of pasture. And when at last he dies as a stranger. He says, I don't belong here. Carry my bones out of Egypt. And those 12, that kaleidoscope of beautiful character, those 12 pictures, they give us the career of this great man, Joseph. But we're just taking one chapter tonight. There's a sense in which I believe this chapter is a hinge chapter. You know, he died when he was 110. Out of those 110 years, he spent over 80 of them in Egypt. And he climbed higher and higher and higher and higher until he became the premier of that great civilization. You see, if he had failed here, his destiny was in jeopardy. What we are looking about here is a man in his 20s. And there's a temptation that comes into his life like the blast of a tornado. And he stood as firm as a rock. And if he broke him here, he would never have climbed the ladder of prosperity and spiritual success. There are young men in this meeting tonight, and you're in your 20s, and young women, and some of you in your late teens. Can I say to you very gently, and as I speak to you, I know that you'll pray for me. But remember, if you make one of these mistakes in your teens or 20s, I'm not saying that your life is wasted, because God is a God of restoration. Praise his name for that. But if you break down morally, There will be positions of distinction amongst God's people that you will never be able to fill. This man can sit in the second chariot because he stood like a pillar of chastity in a very, very difficult day. Now let us look at this. I'll divide my subject into four, and I hope that half an hour will do. My brother said if I needed more time. I must have needed more time after three sessions. Well, I sincerely hope not. I want to think about the situation in which this temptation came. Secondly, I want to think about the stages through which the temptation passed. I want to think thirdly about the strategy by which the temptation was conquered. And I want to say a word or two finally about the suffering by which the temptation was fallen. The situation in which it happened, the stages through which it passed, the strategy by which it was defeated, and the suffering by which it was fallen. Now the situation. Those are very touching words with which we started in verse 1 of chapter 39. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the executioners, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. Sometimes we speak about culture shock. Now, if ever there was a young man suffered culture shock, here you have it. He didn't go down to Egypt on his holiday. He didn't travel down to Egypt looking at job. He was brought. Those who have traveled to other countries, you know that especially if you go oriental-wise, you get a shock when you land into those countries, and things that the people take for granted, and things that never give the folks a second thought, they seem so strange to us. Some of you have witnessed that. You know, Joseph is now moving into the great land of the pyramids. The biggest of those pyramids had been built over 200 years before Joseph landed. The land of the Sphinx. The land of the great pharaoh. The land of opulence. The land of literature, the land of sport, the land of learning, the land of hieroglyphics. I'm sure as he traveled along in the Ishmaelite caravan and started to move up the Nile Valley, his eye caught a glimpse of buildings the likes of which he had never seen before. Don't forget, here's a country boy. Here's a boy coming from a pastoral home. Here's a boy coming from a rural background, and he's ripped away. He's unrighteously torn from the land of his roots. And he's catapulted and he's thrown into a land of sophistication. And he must have been, well, he couldn't have been anything only overawed by the big land into which he landed. I say, if ever there was a lad had culture shock, it must have been Joseph. You see, I would nearly compare it, this transfer, I would nearly compare it to a boy leaving a country home, Christian home, a godly home, quiet, reserved, conservative home. Parents in assembly fellowship, loyal to the assembly, obedient to the Lord, careful, and he's taken from a country environment, this boy in my mind just now, and he longs into Dublin or London or some of the big cities to go to university. Now I know we're on the internet before now and read books about it. See, Joseph couldn't go onto the net. And Joseph couldn't get a book. And Joseph couldn't get a tourist guide. This all came upon him just right now. Well, I feel deeply. I can say that honestly. And I can't appreciate it very much. And I feel, brethren, I'm not here to scold. I would do that with different audiences or I was very severe about it. I believe, brethren, and the bigger faith that it goes, you see the men that speak here. And I'm putting myself in the front line of guilt. We have let our young people down. because we have pushed them out.
Said, we'll pray for them.
God forgive us. Before we push them out, we should give them armfuls of stuff that would fortify them to the big world that they have to live. We push them out and say, all the best, and we creep back into our gospel hall. And some of you, dear brethren, good brethren, and I love you in Christ and you've been a help to me, but I can say that you haven't even the slightest sense of what those young people have to go to say. And it's a culture shock. And they need to have the fortification of spiritual missing to set them up. Because the world and a sensual and a sex-saturated society will just launch its attack upon them, as it happened. The situation in which this temptation came, the shock of culture, the transfer shock. I want to also speak very quickly about success. No, in Potiphar's house, this is before the temptation arrived, he was successful. He wasn't there too long until Potiphar noticed, there's something about this boy that I have never seen in any other slave, and he was able to make him a supervisor of the whole business. And whatever he touched, it seemed to prosper. You know, I think that Joseph got on well in Egyptian culture. Now, you see what I'm saying? When Joseph went to Egyptian culture, he didn't say, I'm a conscientious objector. I'm not gonna fit in here. I think he learned their language. I think he wore their clothes. I think he worked happily and energetically and enthusiastically in their employment. And there's a good deal of Egyptian culture that Joseph imbibed, and he...
But you see, there was a bit came one day and he said, no, enough's enough. He says, there's a part of this culture that I can't take. And that I won't take.
Now, we have to live in culture. You know what I mean?
But you know, it's... The whole difficulty is being able to decide where the line stops. I just speak about Daniel. Sometime I'll come and do the 3 chapters of culture challenge in Daniel. You all know them very well, but I'm not just do that at this session. Maybe some other time in the will of the Lord, I'm not going to turn. But Daniel had the same thing. Taken from Judah and plunged into the big Babylonish, and a freshman, a junior freshman in the college of, the great college of Shinar. Boys, I tell you, what a challenge that was. But he's a man, and he's successful, and he's good looking. They put New Testament labels upon it. This is a good, handsome, fine, clean, conscientious, Christian you. And in the very place where he works as a woman sets herself to bring him down. And the old devil and wickedness in that woman said, that's too good to let go. Now, of course, we know the story. We know that that young man that was working there, God had a plan for his life. Now I feel, as a burden upon my heart as the day closes, I feel there were the young men in this meeting and God has a plan for your life.
It was God's plan for Joseph, and it was Joseph's integrity and prosperity and purity. Those were the very things that made him a target. You know, the better Christian you are, if you're sort of a lay of it, and you're doing a wee bit of social drinking, and you're doing a wee bit on the side, if you're going to live like that, you know, I tell you, there'll be no advert for Christianity. But if you're doing that, you'll have no trouble. You'll have no trouble. Nobody will know what side you're on. But young men, and it'll apply to young sisters too, young men in this meeting, do you see if you have a heart set on seeking to put your foot forward right for God?
Remember, sooner or later it will come. Now, the situation in which the temptation here.
I'll move quickly now to the strategy, or to the stages through which the temptation passed. That will bring me to the kernel of my message. Now don't forget, here's a man in a great big new culture. It's affluent, it's brilliant, it's blazing with glory, it's the place to be. There's gold and silver rolling about just like stones. Never had it so good before. He has got a job in a big household because this man's the chief of the executioners. He's nearly, in a sense, already rubbing shoulders with royalty. God's already positioning him. But as soon as God positions a man, the devil positions his artillery. Now here this woman appears on the scene. There were three stages. Verse number 7, it says, and it came to pass. Verse number 10, it says, it came to pass. Verse number 11 says, and it came to pass. This woman didn't give up after the first attempt. When the first advance failed, she didn't say it too bad. If you don't know it, you couldn't shift that boy. Now, stage 1, it tells us in verse 7, it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. Now, I hope, I don't want to offend anybody, but, and I don't want to say anything inappropriate. But the Bible says it, and they're going to face it. The first thing that Joseph had to deal with was this woman's base carnality. Now that came through in two ways. There was first of all her look. She cast her eye. And secondly, there was her language. She didn't put a foot in it. She said, lie with me. She cast her eyes upon him. Some of you brethren here may have to stand in the office and resist the seductive look. This is not just that you happen to see him. This is a woman with a seductive look in her eye. You know, the eye in the book of Genesis is very important. She saw. She went. Here's Eve in Egypt. She saw a young man. Says, I'll do my best to take him. And just as that fruit on that tree was forbidden fruit to Eve, this boy was forbidden fruit to this woman. You know, the seductive society that we live in, it's playing to the maximum upon idea. And can I say to us all here tonight, myself included, you watch what you look at. Because if you allow, the eye is the window of the soul. I'm not going to mention the things just now. You can talk about television if you like. You can talk about the tabloid. You can talk about the glossy magazines. We can talk about the internet. But listen, especially young men, you watch what you use your eyes for. You see, you young women, I have no reason to believe there are any like this here. But young Christian women, you know, you can use your body to be seductive. It might be the glance of an eye. It might be the provocative presentation of your body by some dress. Remember, that's part of Egypt's culture. And that should have nothing to do with the princesses in God's family. Her look, see, and her language. You know, our language was absolutely brazen. When she looked Joseph in the eye with that seductive glance and said, lie with me.
I don't believe that even a blush on her cheek. One of the things that concerns me greatly, and I'm going to mention it here, we are living in a culture where not only are people looking at things that they wouldn't have looked at, X number of years ago, at least, maybe I don't know, neither. But I'm sure about this. There are people talking about things nowadays that they wouldn't have talked about a while ago. You know, it amazes me at the things that young people talk about. I was at a high school there, less than 2 years ago. I called in to see, this is a high school where they go off at 16. I called in to see the head of the religious department. He says, David, I'm glad to see you. He says, will you stay? I says, I can't stay. At the end of that, I can't stay. He says, we would love to, you see the next class coming in here? He says, I have a class of 14-year-olds, mixed boys and girls. And he says, the discussion in the next class, he says, I'd love you to hear is, have Christians any right to forbid premarital sex? I don't want to offend you. But you see, if you're offended by that, you're living in a false world. Those are 14-year-olds. And boys and girls are going to discuss that in front of each other.
Talk about it!
Now, can I say to some of the younger folks here, you be very careful what you talk about. And they never use.
Oh, I know it's the dumb thing. I know they give the quip. I know they give the double meaning joke. I know they say the thing just like lightning that can be turned and taken anyway.
If you're speaking to a young lady, or young ladies among themselves, or boys and girls, never you be dabbling in what's ambiguous. Or anything that's even slightly unclean. The language and the look out there is putrid. May God help us to see through it and hear that it's true. In the culture of Egypt, the first thing. Then, the second stage, not just the woman's carnality, but he secondly had to watch the woman's constancy. You know, it says in verse number 10, it came to pass as she spake to Joseph, day by day, that he hearkened not unto her. Now listen to this. To lie by her or to be with her. Now those who have studied the language of the Old Testament carefully, and I do myself think that there's a good deal to be said for what I'm going to presently just suggest. The first time, she said to Joseph right up front, right out with it, in her brazen, shameless speech, she said, lie with me. But he wouldn't have it. You see, every day that she would get a chance, she changed it. And she said, lie by me. That was just Joseph, you know, not talking about going the whole way, Joseph, but just be a wee bit closer. Just by me, not with me. So now do you see what had happened? She had reduced to the man, hoping that he would be willing to give. You know, there are some women who have endowed the cultures and the moral standards of Egypt, and they will stop short of nothing. Now, just closeness, and of course she knew in her wicked heart that if I didn't just get him to compromise and have a wee bit of closeness, that it soon go the whole way. Can I say to young folks here in courtship, you see out there, you see the culture of Egypt around us, the permissiveness and the perversion. Courting couples out in the world, as they talk about, they think absolutely nothing about close relations. Nothing. In fact, if you don't go as far as that,
And this whole idea, this whole Victorian idea of waiting until you're married.
As I say, have a bit of sense.
Have a bit of sense. You're going to wait until you're married. That's just something that was 100 years ago.
Listen, that's something that's in the Bible. Now, you see, when you're in courtship, and affectionate for each other, and emotions for each other, and you're together, there are boundaries of closeness that you have to watch. Now, there are certain boundaries of physical contact. And I know that I'm near enough about to here. But I'm trying, this is deadly serious. So you see the chemistry in your constitution and the chemistry in my constitution. And boys and girls are so constituted in this way that you see if you cross a certain boundary, it's impossible to find the break. And if you cross one boundary and you can't find the next boundary, you can't get the breaks and you cross the next boundary, the Bible tells us it's sin. S-I-N. Now may God help us. You see, here was a woman trying to reduce the claim. And she knew. You see, the first time she tried to decoy Joseph, she just hit him head on. Brazen and brutal. And blunt. Of course, Joseph was just as strong and he repeated. But then it says, day by day, it was a constant bombardment. Now, what was the purpose of this constant bombardment? Her aim in this was to try and desensitize him. So that something that all the alarm bells in his pure mind, as a boy in his 20s, the alarm bells just rang at the full decibels as soon as she mentioned that first thing. But then when she reduced the claim and kept at it every day, her idea was that we'll wear him down. You see, one of the tactics of the devil in our sensual society is to bombard us with this so that we think so little of it. Now that happens. Some of you brethren see it in the newspaper. You all see it in the hoarding. And to tell you the truth, we see so much of it that we have nearly become desensitized until we nearly accept a bit of it. And the standards of God's holiness be reduced. We become desensitized. You know, I was reading a letter. There's a man called Mark. I'll not tell you his name. His wife bought him a computer for Christmas 4 or 5 years ago. He got onto the internet. One day, through an email, he bumped into one of these pornographic packages. Which they tell me, I know nothing about it. Tell me they're very common, I don't know. He bumped into it, didn't go looking for it. It flashed across his screen, and that wicked bit in me was also in him. And he made a return trip. He got hooked. And he started to feed the fantasies of his lower nature. He justified it by saying he could control it. And he had what he called a wee bit of private viewing. He was a man, I think he was involved in a Baptist church. That doesn't matter. He was actively involved in it. He found that if he had a bad day at work, and he was down a bit, he went home and at night he had a wee bit of private viewing. Then it became a wee bit more frequent. The alarm bell started ringing. His conscience was activated. He said, Mark, the Lord doesn't want you to do that. But he got it justified again another wee bit. He stopped going to the prayer meeting. He stopped taking part in the local assembly of the Christians in the Baptist church. Stopped taking very much part. Still doing a wee bit on the side. But he was keeping up a front. The Lord kept saying to him, Mark, I don't want you to be doing this. He was a very useful man in the Lord's service. Now, I want to finish the story quickly. Tonight,
That man is sitting with a broken heart. You know what happened? It was one night he had just a little bit extra credit, you know. And his conscience smote him. The next day his son was going to the airport. He drove him to the airport, Mark Jr. He waved him goodbye. When his son was walking away, he gave him thumbs up. Everything's well, Dad. When he was driving home, it came back to him, Mark, you should give up that stuff on the internet. Struggled. And he was nearly angry at the Lord. And nearly said to the Lord, he said, Lord, sure you let me do nothing. No matter what I'm going to do that I enjoy, there's an embargo put upon it. And he said, I'm just held in a cramp. When he arrived back home, some of the priests were at his home. On the way up the freeway, he got a freezing feeling of something going to be wrong here. He said, I know I'm grieving the Lord. He says, the Lord has spoken to my conscience. And he said, the guards were at his home. His wife and his oldest daughter were in tears. A pain cry. And his favorite boy that they killed. And that man sits at home tonight in North America. And he wrote the letter, and in the letter he expressed that God had to take away his favorite son to get him stopped from his private doing. And he feels the guilt of his son's death upon his conscience. And he would advise, he was writing this letter to advise any who are being tempted. Oh, I say to any in the meeting, that is funny. You see this day by day thing. As the day by day thing goes, the temptation becomes stronger and your resistance in. You're strong and that you're capable and you can keep it under control. I stand at this desk tonight and say, there are stronger men than any one of us here. Because the Bible says he has cast down many strong men to the Lord. Now, what is the strategy that Joseph used to avoid this temptation? Well, first of all, it says he withdrew. This great massive word of moral conviction. One syllable, two letters. N-O. He said, no. You know, it takes moral fiber to say no. When most of the people in Egypt culture are saying, okay, they say, let's go. May God help us all to say no. The situation like this. He said no. He refused. Then secondly, he reasoned. I can't go through all his reasoning here. But I'm glad he reasoned. You know, it lets me see that Joseph didn't only refuse, but he had reasons for his refusing. And that's very, very important. Younger Christians in this meeting tonight, this is how you cope with culture. Do you see if you're going to refuse, I'm not just talking about this. You see in modern culture, if you're going to refuse something, if you're going to be able to stand by that refusal, you'll have to have reasons for it. You see, the victory is won in the mind. You see, if you let your mind slip, it'll not be too long until the morals slip. He says, listen, he says, lady, I want to tell you. He says, if I do this, it's against my master. But he says, my master has put me in a position of trust. He says, if I do this, it's against Mary. He says, you're his wife. And he says, according to God's plan, there's two in a marriage. And he says, if I come in as a third party, it's sin. And he says, it's not only against marriage and against the master, he says, it's against my maker. He says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Sin against God. He just called it sin.
Now, I might just stay here very quickly because I see the time is nearly gone. Our brethren, they must know me better than I first of all suspected. You know, there were some things he didn't do. Now listen carefully just for a few minutes. We have to be out of here for 8 o'clock, so at least that gives you some comfort. There's at least another half hour's material here, but I will not use it all tonight. He could have said, and he could have, you see, when we do sin, we can usually excuse it and rationalize it and top it away. Now he could have said, you know, I've had a very hard life. My brothers dumped me. I was sold as a slave. I've had it rough. Life has buffeted me and I deserve at least one night's pleasure. And he could have argued from experience. He could have argued from example. You know, he had three brothers and every one of them was a bad boy. Reuben and Simeon and Levi, every one of those boys had a moral record that was mud. And he could say, our crowd, I just belong to a bad family. And sure, what else can you expect? Just must run in the gene. The make of somebody here and some of the members of your family have made mistakes in this way. Can I say that's no excuse for you to make mistakes? He didn't argue from experience. He didn't argue from the example of his family. He could have argued from his emotions. He could have said, well, like, I never had any of this kind of experience before, and I'm a young man in my 20s. And what are you to do? You know, a young man in his 20s with all the emotions that will be surging through developing adolescence. I was overcome. I just got carried away. I couldn't help it. She enticed me, and I just couldn't help it. And before I knew, I was head over heels into the evil, and it just happened. You know, I've heard a whole lot of people talking to that. So let me be straight, it just doesn't happen. You know what Joseph says? Joseph says, how shall I do? He says, if I had done that, he says, I was responsible. A young man here tonight, I speak to you and I hope I'll pray for you and you pray for me. You see, if this happens, don't you blame it on your girlfriend. Don't you blame it on your peer pressure. Don't you blame it upon your environment. Remember, you do it and you're responsible for your actions. There's nothing preserves a man. We're living in a world where nobody wants to be accountable or responsible. If this happens, we do it. Joseph says, how shall I do this sin? Not from experience, not from extremity, not from his environment. We say everybody does it about here. Not from the exit. No, he didn't use any of those things. He reasoned in connection with God. And then, of course, you know, finally, the man who refused and the man who reasoned, it came a point where he said, get out of here. He said, I need to get out of here. You know, I'm no paragon of purity, I could tell you, or piety either, or conviction. I have nothing I got to boast about at all. May the Lord preserve us all. Many of us could have fallen any time, only the Lord's preserving hand. But listen, especially young men, can I say, you can find yourself in a situation where it comes a time, the only thing you can do is get out. Get out! Should it mean getting up on your 2 feet? Walking to the door, opening the door, getting through the door, closing the door, whatever it takes and whoever it hurts, you get out. Because if you don't, it'll hurt you. It'll hurt the testimony. It'll hurt your conscience. You'll carry a blot for many, many a day. Thank God again that he is the God of destination. But here's a man, and you talk about a clash of cultures. If ever there was a clash of cultures, here you have a woman, and all she's interested in is instant gratification. That's our society. We want it, and we want it now. We're talking about waiting. We must get this now. We want it, and we have to have everything now. We're in the great world of technology and speed. It has to be now.
instant gratification, that was her side. Joseph says, as far as I'm concerned, it's God. And she stands as a symbol of one culture, and Joseph stands as a symbol of another culture. And thank God, on this occasion, there was no common ground between them. He stood. I'll just conclude by talking a little bit about, now you see, the situation in which the temptation came, a successful, good-looking young man. You know, we're reaching in a day when a good, clean Christian lad could hardly go down the street without being accosted. Nearly as bad as that. The situation, and she wouldn't have bothered with him when he was just a slave. You see, when he climbed the ladder and got a couple of stripes and showed himself to be capable and became the head of the house, it was then she struck. You see, some of you brethren, I fear for you. You see, you brethren that are in directorships and you brethren that are in positions of management, and you brethren that have done well, I say may God preserve you and may He graciously preserve us from all. Because the higher up you go, the more seductive the temptress is likely to be, and you'll be the bigger target. The situation in which, the stages through which it passed, the strategy by which Joseph refused, the suffering by which the temptation was followed. Well, he did suffer, and our brethren have told us many, many a time that he lost, but he didn't lose. You know, Matthew Henry, I don't think he can be improved upon. I've often heard the brethren say, he lost his coat, but he kept his character. That's good. You know what Matthew Henry said? He said, it's far better to lose a good coat than it is to lose a good conscience. You know, Joseph lost his freedom. Imagine having to go to prison for it. He lost his freedom. But thank God he kept his future. Because God saw to it that he was vindicated. I'm sure the day when all the knees bowed round throughout Egypt, I'm sure when this wretched woman had to bow, she thought to herself, if I could have got that man, brought that man down years ago, he would never have been up there. But she said, I couldn't bring him down, and God has put him higher than I ever expected. I'm sure it was like us, you know, he lost his robe. And he lost his rank. He lost his reputation. But thank God he kept his righteousness. And that was worth more than anything. Now, I trust the Lord will. I've been practical. I hope I haven't exceeded any boundaries. But I really feel that the days in which we live are so sinister that we need to be quite straight about some of these things. These things are deadly dangerous. And may God help our young people. You know, there's the culture. Let me just summarize and finish up the day. It's time we're going home. Finish up. Some of you have quite a distance to go. Get the parcel of this. Here we have culture. The commencement of culture that's still carried on to 2002. And in each case we have one man that stood against it and survived. How did Noah conquer the culture of Cain? It was fellowship with God. How did Abram conquer the culture of Shinar? It was faith in God. How did Joseph conquer the culture of Egypt? It was a fear of God. Fellowship with God. Faith in God and the fear of God. May the Lord grant that every one of those will be developed in our lives, because that will be the only resource against the insidious culture of our modern age. And dear brethren and sisters, young and old, the subtle seepage of the world into our lives is appalling and alarming. May the Lord grant that we stand against it. You know, there are two rivers, the two longest rivers in the world. I just remind you about them and was asked it down. I would like us all, you can be an Amazon Christian or you can be a Nile Christian. Now which do you want to be? You see, the Nile River, as you all know, it comes down and it breaks into the delta. And there are so many wee bits, wee feeders, branches. Do you see the salt water of the Mediterranean? The Nile sort of just peters out. And the salt water comes 20 miles upstream. It's too many branches. It's too broad. And it lets the salt water. What about the Amazon? The Amazon comes down with a mighty charge into one massive mouth. And it puts fresh water 40 miles out into the ocean. Now, dear brethren, some of us have so many wee parts of our Christian life. We're just petered out on the world coming in. May God grant that we'll pull the tributaries together and we'll be more focused so that we might make an impact. You know, we have something to put out there. Thank God we have an alternative. We don't need to bow to culture. I see people, the culture of this world, you see those holes in the wall. You see people bowing to them every day. That's the world of Cain as large as life. They're worshipping at the new shrine. I tell you, we need to bow in no way to culture. We have something bigger. We have something greater. We have something better. We have something higher. May God help us to live for us, that we might be like Amazon Christians and go out and make an impact in a society for the glory of God. Thank you for your patience. And thank the Lord for his gracious help. I wondered if my throat was sickened for the 20 minutes left in me yet, I think. But I think we'll just conclude on our brother, Mr. Kells. You know, just that I can say, it must be the early 70s when I first came here and was introduced to Brother Kells and received much of his gentle kindness in those days. I have very precious memories of those times and introduced to our brother John here as well. We hold both these brethren in great esteem. They have soldiered on when things were small and other brethren have joined them now. And I know it's an encouragement for them to see all who have come today. And I trust the Lord will bless his word and grant journey and mercy to all who take their way home. Our brother was in good.